What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Plant the Spirit Podcast. I'm your host, Jesse, and thanks for tuning in. Hope everybody is doing great out there. I'm excited to be back on the mic talking to you guys. We have a full episode today. Got some big-time recruiting news to talk about. The spring showcase has wrapped up, and I really wanted to wait to record this episode until after everything was finished and I had a chance to kind of go back and watch the game again a second time. And so we got a lot to talk about. And before we get into it, I do just want to mention one thing. You know, there's just really a lot of positive feeling, positive momentum around this program right now. And it really does feel good to be back in this kind of positive light at Florida State. You know, the last few years were pretty rough and a lot of people were beating up on us and things like that. But it really does feel like Florida State is headed back in the direction that we want it to be the program we know and love. And it's just a great time. I mean, you have new facilities going up. You have one of the best NIL backings in the country with Battles End. You have a lot of positive development in recruiting going on right now. You have excitement around the team in 2023. You have a program that you can be proud of both on and off the field. You know, a likable head coach, a strong AD. It's just a good time right now in Florida State athletics, and now I can't talk for the other sports because it's not going so well in some of the other ones, but as far as football goes, it's just a really positive time, and so I am excited to be just around the program talking about Florida State, and I hope you guys are excited too. So speaking of excitement, obviously you guys know the big news that dropped yesterday. Florida State, getting into recruiting, flipped five-star number one tight end in the 24 class, Landon Thomas, from Georgia to Florida State. Now, he is out of Georgia, and this, to me, is a really big headline for Florida State. You know, obviously, it's always a good thing when you're able to land a five-star player. You know, you're getting a top-tier tight end, the best in the class. That, on its own, is very positive. But I think another part to the story in general is the fact that, you know, when you look at social media, and I know, you know, everyone has different opinions on social media, but these recruits, these kids and people with eyes are, you know, they're all on social media. And when you have a splash flip like this, Florida State stole the headlines yesterday and they really had all the attention. Everybody was kind of turning raising their eyebrows at Florida State. What's going on down there? They really got a lot of momentum. You saw the recruits and the commits that are already committed to Florida State talking about it on social media. And to me, this is just something that puts Florida State in the positive light in recruiting circles. And to me, that's going to pay dividends going forward. So, you know, you look at Tribe 24, they're currently ranked fifth in the 247 composite rankings. So you have a top five class. You know, we haven't even talked about four-star receiver B.J. Gibson committing, LaWayne McCoy committing, four-star receiver as well, which gives Florida State four-star wide receivers in 2024 and now a five-star tight end. You already have a five-star running back in Cam Davis. You also have the four-star quarterback Luke Kromenhawk, who continues to climb up recruiting rankings. And this all just builds the excitement for the future at Florida State. I mean, we talk about how Mike Norvell, when he came in, you hired that offensive head coach and you really kind of had a lackluster offense when he got here. But at the same time, we knew he didn't really have the tools to run his offense effectively. You know, it was an offense built for playmakers with not a whole lot of playmakers. And, you know, he went out to the portal and through recruiting and he got a lot better playmakers to come in and run this offense. But now when you look at the future, when you look a few years out, you're going to have an offense full of four and five star guys. And to me, that's really exciting knowing and just thinking about what he's been able to do with, let's be honest, a lot of three-star players that are here right now, three and four stars. And so now if you give him, you know, a handful of four and five-star players in the future, you know, this offense was already one of the best in the country last year. And so, and it should be again next year. So it just makes you excited about the future at Florida State and to get all the momentum in recruiting that they are right now, to be the talk of social media, to grab the attention of big-time recruits, because, you know, that it really does make a difference. Because, you know, these players, they see these other big-time recruits jump on board Florida State, and they want to come play with them too. So it does help that momentum. It snowballs. And so I think this was a huge get for Florida State, not only to land another five-star player, but to, to be honest, you went into a two-time defending national champion's backyard and took him from, you know, a team of that caliber. And that's huge news. That's huge recruiting momentum for Florida State. And that, to me, it's, you know, they're already trending for five-star defensive back Charles Lester, amongst others. There's some big fish on the line coming for Florida State. And so I really do think that this is one of the reasons why you can kind of bury that narrative now that Norvell can't recruit and the staff can't recruit. Because when you look at the things, when you look at how things set up when he first got here, you know, I was asked a lot on a lot of different programs, was I concerned about the level of recruiting at Florida State? And at the time, you could say, yeah, I mean, I get it. It's not the best in the high school ranks, but they're doing very well in the portal. But at the same time, you have to look at how things laid out in the beginning for Norvell. And I think a lot of people, you know, a lot of the rival fan bases go, okay, well, you know, you've already been here for a few years and we were still in year one. Give us time to get rolling too. But, you know, it's not an apples to apples comparison with looking at other programs. You had Norvell come in from Memphis, who was, you know, he had success there at Memphis, but he really didn't have a whole lot of ties to the state of Florida. So those relationships had to be built. And, you know, as much as it pains me to say this about the program that I love, Florida State was a bit of a dumpster fire whenever he first came in. You know, there was a lot of stuff that needed to be fixed. You had a roster that needed to be overhauled. You had a culture that needed to be fixed, and so on and so forth. But you just kind of had a bad product to sell. You didn't have a whole lot of relationships in the state, and you had to... You couldn't do it in person. You could not go out and build those relationships because of COVID. That is something that people, so many people underestimate, that when you have something that is hard to sell and you can't go out and build relationships at the same time, you are set up for failure. And I said for the longest time, you know, if you look back about a year or so ago when on some of the previous episodes we've recorded, where the reason I wasn't concerned was I said, well, let's just give him a few years. Let Florida State get that success on the field to be able to sell. Because when you looked at Florida State, we already know it's a big brand. You know, the logo holds weight, as they say. And you were still able to get a lot of the big players, the big-time recruits, on campus. It was just hard to get them to commit to a program that was not successful and the future was already kind of in doubt. And so, you know, Norvell hadn't gotten that big extension yet. And so you just weren't sure. A lot of people outside the Florida State circles, I'm sure, were negatively recruiting, saying he's probably not going to be there very long and stuff like that. But now you've gotten that 10-win season. The proof in the work is there. You know, the system is working. The culture has been fixed. You have a good staff. You have extensions. He's, you know, he's already signed a long extension. And now you have a good product to sell. He has a better product to take to market. They have put in the work by going around and doing all these high school camps around the state of Florida. And those relationships that they built are now starting to pay off. It's just, it's taken time, you know. It's kind of like a rubber band. When you pull on one side, you have to wait for that tension to build to kind of yank the other side along. So that success that they achieved last year is just now starting to pay off and going into the future. So to me, that is something that I'm looking forward to as they have a very big pivotal season coming up in 2023. If they can capitalize on that, that momentum is only going to get better. It's only going to keep going. And, you know, to me, 2023 is one of the most pivotal seasons that Florida State has had in a really long time. And the reason I say that is because you have high expectations. You have kind of thrown a lot of your eggs into one basket for this season. Now, of course, they're looking to the future with the recruiting and stuff like that. But, you know, through the portal, through NIL and bringing a lot of these players back, roster retention and whatnot, you've put a lot into 2023, and you need to be able to capitalize on that. You know, you cannot come out and fall flat on your face and you know, go 8-4 and go to the Tax Slayer Bowl and kind of lose this momentum, because we all know how verbal commitments work. Oh, boy, do we ever know. You know, it's more verbal than commitment. But if you can come out and you can live up to those expectations, and it doesn't necessarily mean that Florida State has to win a national title to have a successful season and do well in recruiting. But this is the time you need to win the conference. You need to take the ACC back. You need to potentially get into a New Year's Six Bowl, you know, like the Orange Bowl or something like that. You know, you need to beat your in-state rivals again, you know, and maybe contend for the playoffs. I mean, if you walk with me here for a minute and we dream big at the top of the, I guess, expectations of what this team has, you know, say Florida State does go out and competes for a national championship, maybe even wins it, wins the ACC and is in the playoffs, wins a national championship. Who knows? Anything is possible. You are going to be driving a gas truck into this fire. I mean, it is going to be something to see. It is going to, this program will take off. And, you know, yeah, you're going to have a lot to replace after 2023, but, you know, you're going to have so much momentum, such a big class, you know, in 24 and going forward, capitalizing on that momentum, that you're not going to have to worry about the future. This success is going to be sustainable, but it's going to be crucial to capitalize on that success so you can keep these kids in the class and you can get to the finish line, which is signing day, and land all these big-time recruits. So that is really why this season is so pivotal. And to me, when I say beat your in-state rivals, another thing to mention here when you're talking about the class of 2024, every kid in this class is from Florida or Georgia. You are opening the pipelines back up in your prime recruiting area, which is your state, building such a talent-rich state that Florida is, and Tallahassee is so close to Georgia that you're able to go in there and sell to these kids as well. It's huge, because when you look at the last few years while Florida State was down, Florida and Miami really didn't do anything, you know, to elevate themselves, to take advantage of while Florida State was down. They really didn't do anything to elevate themselves. And now that the tables have turned a little bit, which Miami was never really up, but while those two programs are down a little bit, Florida State is really starting to harness the momentum as the premier team in the state, and they are taking advantage of that. So if you can now, you know, get that stronghold, build that fence around the state and kind of dominate the other two programs in the state, you know, you're not – those two schools, while Florida State was down, you had Clemson, you had Alabama, you had Georgia coming in and robbing the state of talent, and now Florida State – is really focusing their attention on this talent-rich state, on their prime recruiting areas, which is really good to see because that's where you need to focus on. It's easier to keep these kids in the class. You don't have the high-ranked kids from Mississippi and Alabama who have a lot of pressure to stay home. You're home for them. You're close to them. You're close to their families. And so it's exciting because, you know, you look at Florida and Miami, they have a lot of, they got a new coach bump. There's a lot of sheen on a new coach and coming from a program where they've had some success and you feel like they're going to turn things around. That's what we saw at Miami, you know, and that's what we saw at Florida. But then the games have to get played. And that's what a lot of people joked in the other fan bases about. The games have to get played. Well, they did get played. And Florida State went out and won 10 games last year, beat Florida, blew Miami out. And, you know, now what you're seeing with Miami is they had a really good – pretty good class the first year of Cristobal being there. But now I think they're around 49th, 45th maybe in recruiting rankings because they got blown out by everybody, including Middle Tennessee State. And it's – you know, once that new coach sheen starts to wear off, you know, you have to have the proof in the pudding then. And when you look at Napier at Florida, now they still have some recruiting momentum going. But they lost to Vanderbilt last year. They got blown out by Oregon State in the bowl game. You know, they lost to Florida State. And so they lost to both their rivals with Georgia too. And, you know, so when you look at it, if they have another bad season, and I think they are going to be around a 5-6 win team again this year, that could wear off. And, you know, those seats might start to get warm at both of those programs. And so if Florida State can continue to take advantage while they're down and kind of put a stronghold on the state of Florida, that's going to pay really big dividends into the future. You know, you also got Croman Hawk is from Georgia. Cam Davis is from Georgia. So you're getting these top-tier recruits in Georgia as well. Meanwhile, you have a two-time defending national championship who reigns over that state. So it's a really positive time for Florida State on the recruiting trail. I think, like I said, we can kind of lay that myth to rest that this staff can't recruit. You just had to give them time to improve the product, improve the culture, make this a destination place where people wanted to be. Because again, everybody, you know, is still interested in Florida State. They just want, a lot of the kids nowadays want to get on a train that's already rolling. You know, it takes a special kind of player to come in and be part of a rebuild. Not everybody is a Jermaine Johnson who knows you're leaving a program that will potentially put a national championship ring on your finger to come in and work your butt off at a program that may not really win much. And not everybody's like that. And so now that you're getting the success rolling, people will want to be a part of that. And so that's just huge for Florida State. And so I love all the positive momentum. I think there's going to be more positive development in recruiting in the near future. And like I said, if Florida State can really capitalize on a successful 2023 season, then it's only going to keep on rolling. And this thing is really going to get moving in the right direction. So that is exciting. And with that being said, next up, we're going to get into some news before we talk about the spring game and how things went down. First up, Dimitri Emmanuel got his waiver. Not any really new news here, but I haven't been able to talk to about it with you guys yet. Obviously, this is a big win for Florida State. 13-game starter, third team all ACC. And that type of experience is never a bad thing to have. He's a massive guy. And so it just gives you continued depth on the offensive line, which is a group that we're already excited about this year. So his waiver does get granted, and now we're just waiting to hear about Daryl Jackson's, which is a very important waiver to get as well, because you want a guy like that in the middle of your defense. Now, it is a different type of waiver. He's trying to get granted to be able to transfer twice versus necessarily like a medical issue. But, you know, we're waiting to hear about that, but we got one of the two. So that is a positive piece of news there. Now, on the not-so-positive side of things, and I say not-so-positive just because, mostly because of the position group that it's at, and that's Brendan Gant entering the transfer portal. Now, to be honest, guys, I mean, just prepare yourselves, because this is part of football now. They still have to lose some guys to get under the scholarship limit, and if they want to take some guys out of the portal, they're probably going to have to shave a good number of players off of this roster. I'm not sure where exactly they're at right now. But you got to get under the limit. And if you want to add some more guys, you're going to have to push some guys out as well. Now, the reason I say Brendan Gant, and I like Brendan Gant, and I'm not here to like dish on the guy or anything like that. I think he was a good hybrid linebacker that, you know, he transitioned from DB. So I think he kind of gave you a little different aspect than what you got on the roster already at the position. But with that being said, was he a starter? No. Was he an impact player? No. Was he going to be a part of your defense this year? More than likely, yes. I mean, he was an upperclassman with some experience at a position that's already thin as far as your depth is concerned. You know, now you really have three guys in DJ Lundy, Kalen DeLoach, and Tatum Bethune who are your experienced players. Behind that, you don't really have a whole lot. And we're going to get into that in just a minute. But it is a little bit of a concern. But like I said, he's not the first one so far, and he's not going to be the last one in this spring portal session. And, you know, it is open now. I believe it opened from the 15th to the 30th. So you got about a 2-week period here. You may have to slow play just jumping on some guys, because I know teams like Louisville, Syracuse, and others around the country still haven't had their spring games yet. So at the same time, you may have guys who haven't even jumped in the portal yet. They may not quite be aware of who's going, you know, who's a part of their team's plans and things like that. So we still have to wait and see who jumps in there and the quality of players. But, you know, it may change some of the outlook on whether they need to take someone or not. But we're going to go over some portal projections maybe of what Florida State might need here towards the end of the episode. So with that being said, let's talk about some spring football. And before we get into the spring showcase, I really think that, you know, this is always the hot topic. It's always the fun one to talk about. It takes social media by storm and everything. I don't really think we can kick this off without talking about Florida State's new uniforms for 2023. It's always a fun topic to cover. And I think Florida State was long overdue for an update. We had hoped for this for a while. I didn't expect it to come out during the spring game. And so it's a nice welcome change. Not only for the fact that I think they look better than the old uniforms, but you get that updated template. I guess that's what you call it with uniforms. You know, the newer design, the lighter fabrics and things like that. So that in itself is positive, but I am a fan of the new uniforms. I like them. I think in my personal opinion now, I think 2013 uniforms were kind of like the cream of the crop. Those were perfection. But this, to me, is kind of a compromise between what we've had and what we loved. And so I think you go back to, first and foremost, a better shade of garnet. Now, this garnet that we've had in this old uniform template has bothered me for a long time because it was borderline purple. And especially once the players got sweaty and it was nighttime, it just didn't look right. It didn't look like traditional Florida State garnet. It looked purple, almost blackish at times. And so to me, just the color update, the color correction is already a big improvement over the old uniforms. I think these uniforms look cleaner. I think they look more like the classics that we love. You know, now, are they perfect? I don't know. I would have maybe, I think on the garnet one, I think the tribal design on the sleeves looked a little funny because of the elastic in it. So maybe, you know, maybe that was not my favorite part. Maybe I would have put the numbers on the shoulders versus the arms. But either way, I do think it's a big improvement. They're so much cleaner. They're so much more of a classic design. And back to what Florida State should be wearing, I do like it. I like the color improvements, like I said. And I do think it looks a lot better. So I'm excited for that. Again, it plays into the positive momentum for Florida State. It plays into capturing the moment on social media. You know, this made the rounds and was very talked about as well. I don't know if they purposely took a shot at the ACC by not putting the ACC patch on the jersey for their debut, but if it was, then I'm proud that they took a shot because, you know, this conference is just nonstop aggravation. And that was part of the, first off, and that's another little side subject to touch on, was just the broadcast quality was not the greatest. They were zoomed in. They missed a few plays. You know, first off, it was streaming. It wasn't even on the ACC network. They only aired one spring game out of all the teams in the entire conference. This conference just continues to not do them in themselves any favors and just really highlights the reason why we need up out of here. But so anyway, side note on that, I really like the new uniforms. I'm really excited about them. And you know what? You know how they say, you look good, you feel good, you play good. And so I do think it is a much better looking uniform than Florida State has had in the past. So let's get into the spring showcase and some of my thoughts on that. I think overall, it was a good showing by Florida State. You know, it's really hard to take too much from a spring game with a lot of guys out or a lot of guys limited. You got multiple guys in green jerseys out there. You know, you could tell there was a good bit of what we called when I played football brother-in-lawing, where, you know, you're not really going 100%. You're not really trying to take a guy's head off, which is understandable because it's your teammates, it's spring, you're trying to stay healthy, you know, you're really not trying to kill each other in a spring game. But at the same time, you still had a good showing and you really avoided a lot of injuries. You know, I saw that Lamont Green Jr. went down, appeared to be grabbing at his shoulder, maybe a collarbone issue. Hopefully he's fine. I think he's going to be a good player for you. We saw some flashes with him. So hopefully he's okay. But that was really the only noticeable injury that I saw, which is always a positive to make it through without any major injuries. And another overall thing that I saw was this team, that's something that stood out to me. They're just so much bigger. The talent level is so much deeper. You know, I watched a little bit of Clemson's spring game because it was on before Florida State's. And when you watch them, and, you know, credit to Clemson, they are a consistent contender for the playoffs. You look more similar to them now. You look like the size of your team, the muscular development, the bodies on the field look similar to what you see there. So that's a credit not only to Storms and his staff, the nutrition program and everything that gets these guys to that size. It's also a credit to like Alex Atkins and recruiting these massive offensive linemen that we have. And so that is something that I think is great to see. And also getting to the overall talent level and the depth has greatly improved over the past few years. You know, now you can see Florida State come out and have ones and twos competing at a very high level. You know, now you have a second string offensive line that is able to put up a fight against your starting defensive line and things like that. So to me, that only further elevates the level of competition that you get in practice, which is something that even Charlie Ward talked about on a sideline interview during the game. You know, the better the competition you see in practice, the easier that's going to make it in the game. I mean, that's something that we've talked about before with like a Georgia and an Alabama of the worlds. When you're able to go against a second string that consists of high quality players, 4 and 5 stars who are just waiting their turn to be starters, when you go up against a team like a Vanderbilt or something out of the SEC, or, you know, in Florida State's case, if you're going good on good and then you have to go up against, you know, a lesser team in the ACC, like a Boston College or whatnot, then it just becomes easier in a game scenario. So to me, that is something that stands out and that benefits Florida State greatly overall. Another thing that stood out to me was there's just a level of young talent on this team, and it really makes me excited for the future when you see a guy like Brock Glenn throwing touchdowns to Hakeem Williams and to Vandravius Jacobs. That's exciting. And so you see, you already know you have a good crop of young offensive linemen. Rodney Hill looked good at running back. He's a young guy too. So it really does make you excited about the future because, you know, like we mentioned earlier, you're going to lose some guys after 2023. And it was a bit of a concern with some of the level of recruiting and things like that. Now, you know, they're going to go to the portal for the needs that they have. But seeing the young talent on the field makes you feel a little more comfortable, makes you sleep a little better at night for the future going forward. I think in this game, some of your standouts on offense were Vandravius Jacobs, C.J. Campbell, who had an excellent spring game, in my opinion. We're going to talk about these in a minute. Kentron Portier, of course, dominated the spring game. And I think the offensive line had a really good day. I think they look really good. I know some people talked about how dominant the defensive line was, but I thought the O-line, considering they were kind of mix-matching some guys, you didn't have Robert Scott out there, I really think they held their own, and I'm really excited about what this group's going to do this year. On defense, Kalen DeLoach obviously had a big day, and I do think the defensive line, even though they were missing quite a few key players, they still had a good day as well. So the way I approached looking at the spring game is I was like, what do I feel better or worse about after this game? And to be honest, and this is not trying to be like a cop-out, I don't really feel better or worse about anything. Maybe I confirmed some suspicions about what I already thought about this team. And, you know, there are still, because there's still a lot of positives and there's still concerns. I don't think anything was overly highlighted as much as it was, okay, well, that is the case. And so as we run through some of these, that's what we're pretty much going to talk about from that vantage point. Now, keep in mind, whenever I talk about anything Florida State as far as 2023 is concerned, I'm looking at it from the viewpoint of this team is aiming to compete for an ACC championship and potentially a playoff run with national championship aspirations. So I'm looking at it from that point of view. This is not we're trying to get a winning season into a bowl anymore. So when I just keep that in mind as we talk through things here. So first off, offensive line is confirmed to me. They are deep and they are pretty much, you know, I'm not going to say they're the best offensive line in the country, but they're very talented. They legit have 10 to 12 guys who I think could roll out there as starters or significant contributors. You know, they even aired a graphic during the game. This offensive line as a unit has 207 combined starts at the FBS level. And that's also considering Bless Harris, he was only credited with one. He would have been a full season starter last year had he not got injured. So you do feel really good about what you have in this group. The overall size and talent level has greatly improved. And, you know, you could see some transfers out of this group just due to sheer numbers because you have a boatload of offensive linemen. But as long as you keep a majority of them in the boat, then you really feel good about this being the best offensive line that Florida State has had in some years. I feel like this can be one of the better offensive lines in the conference, and I think they can do everything for you that you need. You know, of course, yeah, you have to replace someone like Dylan Gibbons, who was a quality player for you, but I do think as a whole, the unit has really improved in size, in strength, in ability, and in depth. You know, like we said, it's strange to say, but you have 10 to 12 guys at Florida State on their offensive line that could be significant contributors, and you have some real bulldozers out there. I mean, you have some big dudes. You know, when you see Casey Roddick in a uniform, when you see Demetri Emanuel, you know, when you see Keandre Jones, these are massive dudes, and so it is exciting to see this offensive line group. I think they're going to accomplish big things this year. And so that's just something that was confirmed to me. I thought they were going to be good. I think they are on pace to be as good or better than I thought. Moving over to the defensive line, I think they are also very talented, which is not a surprise. That's what we all thought. Now, at defensive end, I think depth is going to be a concern, especially with Derek McClendon transferring out. But at that same breath, I have to say that I think your two starters could be one of the best tandems in all of college football. You know, are they the best? I don't know. But they are certainly going to be one of the best in the ACC. and probably one of the top 10 duos in the country. I mean, you already know Jared Verse is a first-round NFL draft pick. He's an absolute animal. And Patrick Peyton, man, he is really coming on. I mean, he was already the defensive rookie of the year last season in the ACC, and he has bulked up a little bit and also gotten better against the run. He had a couple of reps the other day where he looked almost kind of like Jermaine Johnson, you know, where he's able to read and close that gap to the outside, really set that edge. And that's something that's a really positive development. So I think you have two of the best defensive ends in the country, which is something to be really excited about. Now, behind that, we're going to have to be honest here. I'm a little concerned about depth. And I did like what I saw from Byron Turner Jr., Dante Anderson, Bishop Thomas even. And, you know, Gilbert Edmond was out there, who is an experienced guy from the SEC. You just got a lot of unproven guys that don't have a lot of experience right now that you're going to have to count on. And that makes me a little nervous in case you, you know, knock on wood, end up having to have one of your starters not be there for a period of time or whatever. You know, I do like some of the guys. I wasn't overly impressed with what Edmond did yesterday. And, you know, I know he's still got all summer and all fall to improve his game. He's a multi-year player for you. It just wasn't a very dominant performance. I mean, he's got good speed. He's got good get off. But, you know, to me, the depth here at defensive end is a bit of a concern. At the same time, when you move inside, this defensive tackle room is loaded. And I'm here for it. I'm excited about it. We saw how being thin at defensive tackle really cost FSU last year. I think that was one of their biggest weaknesses on defense, was just when Fabian Lovett wasn't there, you just didn't have much to go on. And now you look at, I think they legit have 6 to 7, maybe even 8 guys that you can put in there and can be significant contributors. We still didn't get to see Braden Fisk, which would have been nice, but he's coming back from that injury. So he'll be there in the fall. We didn't get to see him, but we know, you know, he's going to be a legit guy. And Lovett didn't even really play. I don't think he played yesterday at all. I'm not sure. I didn't see him out there. But like I said, Fisk is legit. You know, he has the proven production at Western Michigan. Now, of course, you're going to have to see how he transitions to a Power 5 team. But I don't think he's going to be, I don't think he's going to suck or anything like that by any means. We know what Fabian Lovett is. We know he's good. You have Daryl Jackson. Now, of course, he's got to get his waiver approved, but he's shown flashes of being a dominant defensive lineman against a good offensive line. It's not like he's going against, you know, 2018 offensive line where everybody was dominant, but he's had quality reps against quality linemen, and he's 6'6", 300 pounds. So that's the type of guy you want in the middle of your defensive line. You have Dennis Briggs, who's a solid player for you, and if he's healthy this year, he can be an impact player. Malcolm Ray wasn't even out there. He's a solid player as well. And yesterday, as far as the spring game is concerned, I really liked what I saw from Daniel Lyons, from Josh Farmer, and a young buck that I'm going to give a high praise shout out to is Aobami Tafasi. You know, when I watched the game and I went back and watched the film, and I watched it 3 times. I watched it the first time. I watched it once primarily on offense and once primarily on defense. He jumps off the screen to me. He is a big, strong, space-eating type of guy. I don't think it's any coincidence he wears 91 like Robert Cooper did. But I think he's stronger and just a higher end. He's going to be a higher ceiling guy. You know, we know he has incredible strength and size from just even being a freshman and seeing some of the workout videos and things like that. But, you know, he just has such a high motor. When you watch him, he is always, his pursuit is unmatched. He is always running after the ball. He is always giving great effort. He is pushing the line of scrimmage back. You know, he may have a hard time getting snaps because this room is so full of talent, but, and he may be more of a 24 guy, but I do think he's going to be able to make an impact. I do think he's going to be able to play for you, and I do think he's going to be dominant in the future. And, you know, the good thing, a side note, really with the young talent on this team is Florida State is now in a position that they haven't been in some time where they should be able to dominate some of these teams. You have teams like Southern Miss, Northern Alabama, you know, especially when you look at like on the defensive side of the ball. Virginia Tech had an abysmal offense last year. Miami's offense was kind of hit or miss, you know, and I don't think Florida's offense is going to be that great this year. So you're going to have a real opportunity to get some of these depth players valuable game reps. And I think Tafasi is a guy who's going to be able to get on the field in a lot of those games and get that valuable experience. So I'm really excited about him. Just wanted to give him a shout out because he just really jumped off the screen to me. Looking at running back, man, this room, this is something that was confirmed. We already knew this. This is no surprise. But this room is really talented and really deep. My biggest concern about the running back room is transfers because it is so deep. Now, Trey Benson was in a green jersey, so there wasn't a whole lot you could take from there. But we know what he is. And, you know, again, last year was his first real collegiate season. So he's still going to continue to get better, you know, once coming back from that injury, getting more experience, now more familiar with the system. We know what he is. Toa Fili, man, when you just watching him play yesterday, he is so fast and so athletic. If he can just do what he does on a consistent basis, he can be a real game changer. You know, a lot of times he gets overlooked, but as a pass catcher out of the backfield and as a speed back, man, he just has a different gear. Now, Rodney Hill, he played a lot on Saturday, and I think he looks good as well. He's a young back that's still developing, but already a quality back for you. And I have to give a shout out to CJ Campbell. He put on a show. He really surprised me, man. He looks like a really good quality back. My biggest concern is somebody's going to see CJ Campbell and try and steal him away from FSU because he just has something to him. And now we saw a glimpse of this last season. We know he was out with injury. Didn't even expect him to make it back. But when he did get back, he did flash a little bit. But yesterday in that spring game, he really had a good game. And so I hope he sticks around. And I hope that he gets an expanded role this year at Florida State. Because there is really something to him. And I think he will definitely, you know, he turned some heads. And we didn't even get to see Keziah Holmes yesterday. But we know that he is a talented back that we just haven't got to see a whole lot of. So hopefully everything is good there and he'll be back by the fall. But this room is just loaded. And it is exciting to know because when you pair that with a quality offensive line and knowing that they ran for over 200 yards in 8 games last year, 7 consecutive games, you could see that being the case this year, especially with a good passing threat. And, you know, it's a combination for success. So that is something that I'm really excited about. And like I said, the spring game really only just confirmed that what we knew about this offensive running back room already. So now looking at quarterback, I know people are talking about Jordan a little bit, and he had a slow start, and he threw a pick, and you know, I get that, but I'm the least bit worried about Jordan. You know, he came on late, threw an absolute dime to Portier for a touchdown. You didn't have Johnny Wilson out there. You didn't have Darian Williamson out there, so he didn't have some of his top targets and things like that. You know, but he also had some nice runs, and it's nice to see him use his legs because last year he really didn't use his legs unless he had to. And, you know, it's nice to see that he still has that extreme athletic ability and to know that he has that second gear that he can just really pull away from a defense with. And, you know, that pairs well, again, with that offensive line and that running back room. So I'm the least bit worried about Jordan. We heard nothing but good all spring throughout practice and the people who watched it. So I'm far from in panic mode about that. I do actually feel a little better about Tate as backup. You know, he threw that dime to Rodney Hill for a touchdown. You know, and Tate can be a real mixed bag at times. He is a guy where he can make you, you know, he can throw a ball that's like, wow, man, he's really got an arm on him. He can also throw a ball that makes you go, oh, Lord, what was that? You know, but he didn't have any of those yesterday, which was nice. He didn't have any of those, oh, dear Lord, throws. And so I think that that's a positive development for him. I think that he is coming along as a more consistent quarterback. You know, is he going to take the starting role? No, but I do think that he is a guy who I feel more confident in as the QB2 right now, especially considering if you were to put him behind the number one offensive line with a full slot of the number one wide receivers like Johnny Wilson and Portier and all those guys. I think Duffy is progressing well. He looked good. I think he will be potentially pushing Tate for that spot. But, you know, I still think he's just got a little more development to go. He looks better than he did before, but he just needs to learn to pull the trigger a little bit more. You know, sometimes he seems a little gun-shy and likes to tuck it and run. Brock Glenn is, you know, he might not be in contention for backup or anything like that this year, but you can really tell he has a bright future, man. He's got a high upside. You can see why Ohio State took him. You can see why Florida State stayed on him and flipped him back. You know, I think between Brock Glenn and Luke Cromenhawk, the future in the quarterback room is going to be one heck of a competition that I can't wait to see. And so I like what I saw from Brock Glenn, especially, like I said, when you combine him with some of the younger receivers that he's going to be coming up with, and to see him get some touchdowns for them. At tight end, could we have a fourth tight end now? I mean, was it not the Preston Daniels show? I mean, shout out to him, you know, for a walk-on tight end who does have experience. Now, I looked it up. He has 539 snaps of experience. Man, he put on a show. At first, when he kept catching it, I was like, dang, look at Kyle Morlock. He looks good. And it's like, oh, that's Preston Daniel. And so you might have a fourth tight end here that you can have a consistent target in. Speaking of Morlock, he did have a drop that hit him in the hands, but then he bounced back with a few nice catches. You know, I think he's still adjusting coming from the D2 level, but I think he's going to be fine. He's a big target. Jaheim Bell didn't get a whole lot of targets, so you really didn't get to see him do a whole lot. He did have a nice catch, and it was funny when you saw the DB try and tackle him. It looked like he was struggling pretty hard to get him to the ground because, you know, he just looks the part. He's such a big, strong athlete that I can't wait to see him in a game situation. And again, that's a guy that I'm not worried about because you have proven production in the SEC while he was at South Carolina, so not worried about that. Biscuit had a nice grab. Man, he's just so big. Like, he is just a massive dude. He looks like an offensive lineman playing tight end. So I do like the mix that you get here with kind of an undersized athletic tight end in Jaheim Bell, a really tall target in Kyle Morlock. Then you have kind of a really big body tight end in Marquiston Douglas. And, you know, again, hey, you never know. Preston Daniel might be a guy who can surprise you. I know he had that really nice catch against North Carolina where Norvell and them, they schemed the whole field went one way and he went the other way and caught the ball. And, you know, so he's made some plays. So I think that you may have a fourth guy there as well. At wide receiver, I loved what we saw from Kentron Portier. And I think we needed to see that because I think the concern coming into the season, into spring, was who's going to be wide receiver number two. You know what you have in Johnny Wilson, 6'7", incredible athlete, body control is unreal. You know, it's almost an unfair advantage to have him. You basically have to double team him, and even then, it's probably not fair then too. But you're just wondering who was going to step up and be number two. And, you know, especially once Malik McLean transferred out. And, you know, to me, he was a guy who had the tools to be really good, but he was kind of inconsistent. So I don't know that he was such the huge loss that a lot of people thought. But again, you know, I think that to see Portier step up and be that wide receiver number two, show that he's capable of that and have that sick one-handed grab was nice too. That really makes you sleep better at night knowing that you might have two guys that you can count on. Now, the issue that I have, the concern that I have with wide receiver is after that, it gets the water gets a little murky at who's going to be the next to step up. And that's knowing that you have a kind of an uncertain timeline of when Michael Pittman's going to be back. Now, if he can be back before the LSU game and the Clemson game, I'm going to feel a lot better. Because it is a bit of a concern right now. I mean, to be fair, I would have liked to see more out of Winston Wright in this game. He's still working back from injury. I understand that. He wasn't in a green no-contact jersey, so it's nice to see him full go. And he will have all summer with Jordan to kind of work on that timing and route development. And, you know, again, he's another guy that proved it at a college level. And so I'm not overly worried about him. I just would have liked to see maybe a little bit more. I don't know the status of Darian Williamson. It would be nice to see him come back. I know he had a big game against Boston College, almost 100 yards, and then kind of disappeared the rest of the season with an injury. So you would like to see this wide receiver room. If they're healthy, I'm not overly worried about it. But the question is, are they going to be healthy when you need them? Because, you know, September's a big month for this program. You have two of the most important games on the schedule in the month of September. You obviously saw Vandrevious Jacobs out there, and we know he's got a lot of hype this spring, which is exciting. And, you know, I don't care if he's a true freshman. If he's the best player in the room at the position and deserves to be on the field, put him on the field. I don't think we should be scared to play a true freshman if he is the guy. And, you know, we saw that one catch that he had down on the sideline that really showed a flash of what he can be and why everyone is so hyped about him. You know, he moves different. He's just a different looking guy, and that is exciting. Now, with that being said, he also had a fumble and bobbled a second end around play. So it does kind of make you step back and go, okay, well, we're still having some freshman mistakes here, and you still got a long time before September to continue his development. But in a game like Clemson, in a game like LSU, how much do you want to rely on a true freshman? So that's the only question I have there. But he does look good. So, you know, if he has to step into that starting role, then, hey, so be it. You know, you also saw Hakeem Williams get a few catches and a touchdown, which is nice to see because maybe you thought he's going to be a little farther along and he's working into adjusting to college. And I think he's going to be fine in the long run. So it was nice to see him get in there as well. Of course, you could always have Ja'Kai Douglas line up in the slot. You know, he's a really fast kind of burner guy who normally catches the ball out of the backfield anyway. So, like I said, you have a few question marks as far as depth at receiver goes, but I do think you have some talent there as well. Now, there is the possibility that Florida State could go to a lot more two tight end looks, similar to what Georgia did last year. Now, I mean, maybe hide your deficiency at wide receiver. Now, to be perfectly fair, you're not rolling out Brock Bowers and Darnell Washington, who are both massive, really high-quality tight ends. But that doesn't mean your tight ends are bad. I mean, you have Jaheim Bell, who's a versatile player. He's played multiple positions. He's proven at the college level that he can be a game changer for Florida State. You know, you also have Morlock, who's 6'7", and you would hope that he transitions well to the FBS level. And you still have two other tight ends, apparently, that might be some real able to contribute. So that could be an option as well to help cover that up, and at least until you get Micah Pittman back from his injury. But hopefully he's back sooner than later. At linebacker, I thought Kalen DeLoach had a really good day. Obviously, he had a pick that would have probably been a pick six. He also had a strip, scoop, and score. So big day there. He is just an incredible athlete, just a little bit inconsistent at times. But if he can put it all together, you know, you feel really good about what him and Tatum Bethune bring to the table, especially if Tatum's healthy. I know a lot of times he was playing through injury last year. And to be honest, I really liked what I saw out of DJ Lundy. You know, he's obviously a physical specimen, someone who they've commented that he's in the best shape he's been in. They said that last year too. And I think that he can be a real contributor for you on this defense. I think he had a good spring game. I think Omar Graham Jr. is the same way. You know, like we talked about earlier, he's a guy that got a lot of reps. And he's a guy that with Blake Nicholson not enrolling early, he was able to get some more reps in spring. You know, and I think that he's a guy who still needs some polishing, but he can be a contributor in some of the, especially in those games like we talked about against Southern Miss, against North Alabama, against maybe Virginia Tech or something like that. You can get him those in-game experiences in games like that. And I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to give a guy, sometimes you forget he's on the roster, but Steven Dix actually had a nice spring game, I think. When you saw him out there, he really gave a lot of effort. He was in the right place a lot of times. And, I mean, really, he's in great physical condition. He is one of those guys who looks like he's just chiseled out of stone, and you would expect to be a great linebacker. He just really had a hard time putting it together on the field on a consistent basis. He really hasn't played a whole lot, but he had a nice spring game. So maybe that could be someone who could help contribute as well. You know, but we're about to talk about the portal here in a minute, so we're going to talk about that too, especially with Brandon Gant leaving. Secondary to me is about as expected. You have a lot of talent at the cornerback position. Fentrell Cypress really didn't get a whole lot of work, but you know, we know when the lights come on Saturday, we know what he's capable of. We saw that during his time at Virginia. Not overly worried about him. You know, Renardo Green is a solid corner for you. I really like Greedy Vance. I really like Azaria Thomas, and I think they had a good game on Saturday as well. So I'm not worried about the corner position. Of course, when you talk about the back end of this defense, safety is obviously the concern here. You know, I'm a big fan of Shaheem Brown. They said that Travis Jay had a good spring, but dealing with a little injury right now. Akeem Dent has proven on the field that he can be a good safety as well. But you just don't really have a high-end guy back there like a Jamie Robinson, and you don't have a lot of depth either, which is a concern. You know, Jamie Robinson was just a great college player that you were able to acquire through the portal, that he just helped you sleep better at night knowing that you had a guy like that on the back end of your defense. I believe he led the team in tackles both years, the last 2 years, and so he's going to be hard to replace. And, you know, maybe that's something that they're going to have to look for in the portal as well, which we're about to talk about. But, you know, safety is a little bit of concern for me. But at the same time, I do think that you got to give them more time to work with the guys that are on the roster. You know, you got Duke Cooper that moved back there. They really just didn't seem to get a whole – they didn't do anything bad. I mean, they didn't do bad. They just really didn't do a whole lot of good either. But the more time you get Patrick Surtain to work with them, you never know what you might get out of that group. So that's pretty much where I'm at. Oh, and the kickers made all their kicks, so that's good. There wasn't a whole lot of kicks, but, you know, they made their kicks, so that's good. It still makes me nervous, but, you know, it is what it is. So at that point, I think we can kind of put a bow on the spring game, and that'll be it for that part of the show. And the last thing I want to talk about is speaking of the portal and speaking of areas we're confident and areas that we're not so confident and depth is a concern, obviously we know that Florida State is probably destined to lose some more guys in the portal. But if I were Mike Norvell, what would I want out of the portal? What do I feel like this team needs out of the portal? Now, I would say that we have to start this conversation off with, it depends on what's available. That's first and foremost. Florida State is not in such a talent deficiency anymore that you have to take just for the sake of taking. You know, you don't have to take a not quality guy because you feel like you have a deficiency. You can kind of shop around a little bit because the talent floor on your roster has been raised. So we have to start by saying it depends on what's available out there. And you also have to keep in mind in this spring portal period that you may not get that mad rush of guys. We haven't really seen a mad rush of people hit the portal yet. I think a lot of people have come to realize just because you hit the portal doesn't mean you're going to find a home. And at the same time, when you get to the spring, now you've been through spring practice. So a lot of the guys that you're going to see hit the portal are going to be like a Brendan Gant, are going to be like a Derek McClendon. Those are going to be guys that it doesn't necessarily mean they're good or bad. It just means maybe they're not starter level quality at their on their team. They have figured out now that they are not part of the plans for that program to be a starter. So that is something also to keep in mind. Now, that doesn't mean you can't get a good quality player. Maybe someone just doesn't like their coach or a new staff. They don't feel a part of the team. They want to get out of there, whatever the case may be. And also keep in mind, a late portal grab that you got before was Dylan Gibbons. He was not a starter at Notre Dame. He was a backup offensive lineman on a very talented, one of the best offensive lines in college football at that time. So that doesn't mean that you can't still get a quality player who can be a multi-year starter for you. So we'll have to see what comes available in the next week or so and see what they go after. Obviously, we know they do have success in the portal, and I would imagine they are going, they know their deficiencies. They're going to go after what they feel like they need. But if it were me, I would not mind them taking another defensive end. Now, I know you see a guy coming out, like the guy coming out of Washington, Savelle Small. He was a former five-star recruit coming out of Washington, edge rusher. Would you love to have him? Of course you would. But in the portal era, are you going to be able to stack a lot of five-star guys, four-star guys at a certain position? Probably not, because there's playing opportunity everywhere. And that can be sold, and people can be, you know, they can move around to get themselves on the field where they want to be. So it may be a hard sell to get someone like that of that quality to come in and be behind Jared Verse and be behind Patrick Payton, you know, or without trying to scare off a guy like Patrick Payton or something like that. That can be tough. But, you know, I don't know, maybe you sell him that Jared Verse is going to the league next year and now you can just step into that role after being a rotational player, you know, however they could sell it. But I do think if you can find a guy who is an impact player or someone who can be a really high quality, and I hate to say it, but like a Derek McClendon-esque type of player, someone who can come in and be a solid depth player for you at defensive end, I think they should jump there, you know, because like I said, you have really good top end guys, but after that, it gets a little nerve-wracking. So if they can find a good solid defensive end, that would be a take for me. Linebacker is definitely, most definitely a take here because I think it is a very thin position. I like some of the younger guys you have. They're just not proven. Now, we know in today's game that's very pass heavy. You know, sometimes you can get away with running maybe two linebackers on the field to kind of hide that a little bit. But at the same time, to me, if you could find a guy out there at linebacker who is at least a solid, reliable depth piece, that is an automatic take for me. If you could find someone who is contention for a day one starter or that third linebacker position, then to me it's a no-brainer to take that just because of the you know being thin. And we saw that last year Tatum Bethune did have to play through some injury as well. So, you know, if you were to lose like one more guy, then you might be in trouble with that position. So to me, so far, defensive end and linebacker would be a go on a take there. As far as safety is concerned, I definitely think that is a position of need as well on this roster. If you can find a day one starter like a Jamie Robinson in the portal who, you know, again, you got from the portal out of South Carolina, you know, and who knows, we like to take South Carolina's players, so I don't know what they got at safety. Maybe we can look at their roster a little bit. But, you know, if you can get someone like that to come in who could be a day one starter, I don't think you worry about hurting anybody's feelings on this defense. I think you take them because that is a position that you need a game changer at, and it would really help this defense to have that. Now, if you could get a solid depth piece too, I would be okay with that. I just think it's about adding the depth at the safety position. The only other position I think you really need to look at, because I think you're pretty much good across the board everywhere else. I think your defensive tackles are fine, your O-line, running backs, tight ends, quarterback, you know, secondary, outside of safety. I think you're good to go. The only other thing I would really look at is, depending on the health, and this is something that the staff knows that I don't, if you could find a impact guy at wide receiver, I would take him. That's just me personally. I don't think you need a wide receiver, but if you could find an impact guy, I would like to have him, because you want as many playmakers as possible. And so if you were to find a guy in the portal that was a potential impact player at that position, I think you take him. And a lot of that is because your top two guys, that's mostly all you got. So if something were to happen to one of them, knock on wood, you hope not, then you might be in a little bit of a hard place there. So to me, defensive end, linebacker, safety, and a game-changing wide receiver would be what I would take. But, you know, again, it just depends on the health of that room and what they have. And this staff knows what, you know, I trust their evaluations. I trust them in the portal. If anything, they have shown you to trust what they're going to do in the portal. But like I said, the portal is back open April 15th through the 30th. And so we'll have to see how that goes this time around. And so with that, guys, we're going to go ahead and wrap it up. We're approaching an hour now, and I don't want to run you too long. But like I said, I think overall the theme here is this team looks like some of the better teams you watch when you look at the spring games on TV, when you look at the Clemsons and watch those kind of spring games. And you know, my wife's a Georgia fan, so we had the Georgia one on. We pulled the second TV out in the living room because theirs was on the exact same time as Florida State's. And just watching it, the size, you know, the bodies you see on the field, the talent level and the depth seems to be more similar to those programs than it was to Florida State in the past, where we knew they had some issues. And that really makes you excited. I don't think anything was terrible in the spring game. I think it was overall a good spring game. And so I think it just confirmed a lot of the things that we already knew about this team. But overall, there's plenty of reason to be positive. The momentum in recruiting is really ticking up. And like I said, just overall, it's a really good time to be around Florida State right now. And so, you know, we're going to transition into summer, and it's going to be summer workouts. And I'm just ready for the fall. I'm so ready for the season to be here. I'm so excited. I'm ready to be in Tallahassee, inside Duke Campbell Stadium, and watching this team perform. I do have some things coming up I think you guys are going to enjoy. I got some plans for a few episodes. And the next one, we're going to look at what it would take for Florida State to run the table and go all the way. Maybe not go undefeated, but to a national championship, and kind of look at some data from some teams in the past and how they performed as well. So be on the lookout for that. Of course, I'm still working on the preseason digital magazine for you guys. I think you're going to love it, but you obviously have to wait until after portal season wraps up, see who's coming, who's going, and all the roster changes. So once that's all wrapped up, hopefully early summer, I'll have that out for you guys. But at the same time, guys, that's going to be it. We're going to go ahead and wrap it up. And as always, thank you so much for listening. Thank you for your support. And go Noles.